Good afternoon, council. Welcome to the your part of the afternoon session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. I'm Rico Bishop, and I'm joined here by Judge Francie Reedman and Judge Larry Welch. Just a quick reminder that these arguments are being live streamed by NETV and recorded and will be posted on the Supreme Court's website. So keep in mind, to the extent you're sharing any confidential or sensitive information. Also, you can see on your screen there is a time clock for your 10 minutes, so please keep an eye on that as you present to us. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with State of Nebraska versus Wiley. Helen, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Matt Kosmicki. I represent the appellant, Mr. Clayton Wiley, in this matter. Mr. Clayton Wiley was charged in Lancaster County Court or District Court with domestic violence, subsequent offense, and count two, child abuse. After jury trial, he was found guilty and sentenced by the district court to, on count one, 2 years of imprisonment to the Department of Correctional Services, 18 months of post-release supervision, and on count two, 6 months, I think, of imprisonment. Mr. Wiley appeals to this court and appealing the judgment and sentence of the district court, and assigned some 13 errors that he believes was committed during the pendency of this matter. He assigns that the district court abused its discretion by vacating the invalid sentence and allowing the state to introduce evidence of prior convictions for enhancement after the state had already arrested and his sentence had been pronounced. He then assigned some 12 or 11 errors where his trial counsel was ineffective. And then lastly, he assigned his error that the sentence was excessive. The first assignment of error was the district court abused its discretion by vacating the invalid sentence and allowing the state to introduce evidence of prior convictions for enhancement purposes after the state had arrested and sentence has been pronounced. He was charged in the original information. It was a subsequent offense, so naturally the charge is, the underlying charge is domestic violence, and then to enhance it to a 3A felony, the state has the burden of proving that he had been convicted of domestic violence before. Domestic violence, just as the underlying charge, is a class one misdemeanor. It's up to 1 year in jail, up to $1,000 fine. And a DV with a subsequent offense is a 3A felony, up to 3 years imprisonment, 18 months of post-release supervision. At the sentencing in this hearing, the district court originally sentenced Mr. Wiley to the 2 year sentence and 18 months of post-release supervision. And then after some hours had passed, called the parties back to resentence Mr. Wiley. That he had been, the court realized that it had sentenced him to something, a legal sentence, because he was still, as it stood on the record, only convicted of a class one misdemeanor. Wiley contends to this court that by calling the state back and allowing them to reopen their case in chief and basically plug the holes in their burden of proof, that the court was appearing as impartial. The judge must be careful not to act in a dual capacity as judge and advocate. And remember, this case had already been pending for a long time, went through at least a couple of days of jury trial, a jury verdict. Something was deferred pending a pre-sentence report. They were there for sentencing, I think it was about a month later. And by calling the parties back, the court in essence flags for the state that there was a failure in their proof.
Mr. Kosmicki, how are the circumstances here distinguishable from State v. Valdez, in which the Supreme Court has made it clear that enhancement matters can be sent back and evidence received?
Right, and I understand Valdez says that they can send back for Valdez holds a proposition that when enhancement hasn't occurred, they can be sent it back. But in this case, I guess what Wiley is contending or arguing to this court is that the fact that the trial court did it rather than an appellate court, that the trial court appears as impartial because the trial court's flagging the failure in their proof. This is an appellate court sending it back. saying, hey, we missed this. I know this may be like, you know, I guess form over substance. If you remand it back for further enhancement hearings, but for the trial court to do it, Mr. Wiley argued for this court that that was an appearance of, at least the appearance of being impartial. And of course, the court should have vacated its original sentence because it was illegal. I mean, it was, you know, he's convicted of a class one misdemeanor. He couldn't be sentenced to 2 years imprisonment. It could only, max he could have got was a year in county jail. But by, and so the sentence was clearly illegal. What Wiley once asked this court to do is that the judgment, at least in the district court, was final and should have been a, at least a sentence to 1 year. I can't tell. I'm sorry. There's a signal by Justice Reidman. I don't know if you're asking a question.
No.
Oh, it just shows your name, and I don't know if that means you got a question or not. Sorry. You know, it moves around when somebody makes a noise or does something, so I'm sorry about that. Okay. So that's what Mr. Wiley is arguing to this court about that. Okay. Mr. Wiley also wants to argue to this court that his counsel is ineffective for failure for a number of ways. And the first one was to failure to object to a motion in limine that was filed by the state that was to prevent him from introducing specific instances of violence by Samantha Jacoby, the victim in this case. Of course, the Nebraska rules of evidence in Rule 404 and 405 in State versus Luchuk authorized that evidence of violent aggressive behavior on an alleged victim is admissible or to corroborate that the defendant acted in self-defense and that the victim was the initial aggressor, I guess. Trial counsel did not object to the motion in limine, didn't argue it, and he didn't present any evidence. The trial counsel didn't present any evidence of those specific acts of violence. So
what specific acts are we supposed to understand he claims he should have been permitted to present?
Well, Wiley told his attorney, trial counsel, that he wanted to claim self-defense, that she had been aggressive to him in the past. They've had other problems, and so he wanted to talk about that, that there have been other instances where she was the initial aggressor, and that's why when this happened, he was reacting. This incident on May 5th, she was the initial aggressor, and he was, or at least he felt she was going to be, and he was reacting in self-defense. Now, none of that's in the record because those are conversations between Wiley and his attorney that are not going to be on the record. And I understand that the state's argument that these are mere conclusory allegations or whatever. And that's the nature of these things. These are communications between his attorney, between the defendant and his attorney. There's never going to be any evidence of that on the record or anything. And so I could say all sorts of things that Wiley told his attorney, but it's never going to be supported on the record. That's what...
It won't be supported on this record, but isn't the purpose for to preserve it for a post-conviction?
Yes.
Claim?
Right.
So doesn't case law require that we need specific allegations of deficient performance?
Well, and the problem is that Wiley can't name any dates that these happened. All he can say is in the past, at the time that she had attacked him. So that's hard to, I guess, I think it's hard to allege with specificity when she did this. I guess as trial counsel, appellate counsel, I have to work with what he gives me. And so I can't pin it down more specific than that she's been violent in the past. So sometimes I guess on appeal, we're stuck with the information we get from our clients. So anyways, moving right along. He's also said that his trial counsel is ineffective for failing to ensure that he was appeared in street clothing and not restrained. You know, there was a motion to allow him to appear in street clothing. The record shows that at some point there's a reference to him in an orange jumpsuit, so we know that he wasn't in street clothing. Wiley had street clothing available to him. We know he wasn't, you can assume from the record that he was restrained because there was no motion for him to not to appear in restraints. And Wiley argues to this court that appearing before a jury dressed in orange jail jumpsuits and being restrained, is a constant reminder for the jury to see the state that he's in and may have caused jurors to judge him for, you know, how he appears rather than the facts presented in court. He also assigns that his trial counsel is ineffective for failing to call several witnesses, a neighbor woman, Nicole King, Officer Perkins. And the reason he wanted to call those people is so that the victim's testimony could be tested, or her veracity could be tested. How did Miss Jacoby look? Did she have any injuries? Did she tell you she was fine, at least to the neighbor woman? And could kind of verify some of the accounts from Miss Jacoby. So that was the purpose of asking or failing to call those witnesses. That's what I know there weren't depositions taken, and Wiley didn't allow a go ahead. I can't hear you. Judge Welch, I can't hear you. Can you hear me, guys?
I can hear you. I don't see that he's actually asking anything. Oh, okay. Are you, Judge Welch? Yes, no. I can't hear you either, Judge Welch.
Are you muted?
Yeah, check your mute button, Judge Welch.
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
Well, best laid plans. My time's out. I don't know if you want to work on that issue or what we're going to do.
Yeah, we're gonna just take a second here. Jody, can we see about getting Judge Welch back with audio? Judge Welch, you may need to sign out and then, or you know, end your session and then come back in.
Yes, Judge Welch, you probably need to back out of WebEx and then rejoin the meeting, and that should take care of the problem.
He's calling on his expert assistance.
Right. Can you hear me?
Can hear you. Can't okay. See you, but we can hear you.
Okay. Let's see if something here. Let's try this. There we go. I'm back.
Yay. All right. Did you have a question that you wanted to ask Mr. Kosmicki before we turn this over to Ms. Osborne?
I do not.
You do not. Okay.
I do
not. All right, Ms. Osborne. All right. Let me make sure. Jody, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Osborne.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. This is a criminal case where appellant was found guilty of third-degree domestic assault and child abuse after a jury trial. The state will submit Wiley's excessive sentence and ineffective assistance of counsel claims on the brief, unless there are specific questions from the court. The only other issue on appeal is whether the district court erred in holding an enhancement hearing after it vacated the illegal sentence it initially imposed on count one, where it found the domestic assault conviction was a second offense. Wiley concedes the district court properly vacated the illegal sentence that was imposed on count one and proceeded to resentencing, but he argues that the court erred by holding an enhancement hearing prior to that resentencing. So the question presented here is whether it is a proper remedy for the district court to proceed with a new enhancement hearing after it has vacated the illegal sentence that was imposed on count one. The state submits that this was the proper remedy pursuant to Nebraska Supreme Court precedent. It is well established that evidence of a prior conviction must be introduced in order to enhance the sentence. It's also well established that a sentence is illegal when it is not authorized by the judgment of conviction or when it is greater or less than the permissible statutory penalty for the crime. And when a sentence is imposed, when a sentence that is imposed is unauthorized by law, it is void. And a void sentence is no sentence. So here it's undisputed that the district court did not receive evidence at the initial sentencing hearing to support enhancement of the offense of third degree domestic assault, second offense. And since there was no enhancement, the sentence initially imposed on count one of 2 years imprisonment followed by 18 months post-release supervision exceeded the statutory limits, and thus it was an illegal and void sentence. The Nebraska Supreme Court has stated that once the original sentence is vacated, the sentence is rendered a nullity and the trial court may treat that case anew for evidentiary purposes. The district court retains jurisdiction until an appeal is perfected. And because the sentence on count one here was illegal, it had the authority to not only vacate the sentence, which rendered it a nullity, but to also treat the case anew for evidentiary purposes by holding an enhancement hearing and then resentencing Wiley. So the first thing to consider here is that Wiley attempts to assert propositions of law as to when trial courts can permit a party to withdraw their rest, and cites to State versus Laughlin, Court of Appeals opinion from 2016. But that case dealt with the state withdrawing its rest in a trial on the merits. That's not applicable here. A jury trial in this case had already been conducted and was concluded that had occurred a month earlier. Wiley was found guilty of domestic assault and child abuse. And at this point in the proceedings, the sentences were being imposed. And so the state needed to enhance count one to a second offense. And enhancing a conviction to a second offense is not a trial on the merits. Moreover, the initial sentencing hearing did not involve the state presenting evidence, then resting, and then later attempting to withdraw that rest and fill gaps in its evidence. In fact, the state never presented any evidence at all during the initial sentencing hearing. So not only was there no rest by the state, there was no withdrawal of a rest by the state as claimed by Wiley. In claiming that the district court acted impartially by holding an enhancement hearing after it had vacated that illegal sentence, Wiley relies heavily on State versus Gray. That's an overruled Court of Appeals opinion. And that opinion also happens to be factually distinguishable from the present case. In Gray, the state offered three prior convictions for enhancement. After it offered those priors, the state stated it had no further evidence and rested. The defendant was then granted a continuance. But before the parties came back on a resumption of that enhancement hearing, the judge reviewed the state's evidence. The judge became concerned that the evidence was insufficient for enhancement purposes. The judge then expressed that concern that the evidence was insufficient to both parties, including the state. And then over the defendant's objection, the court allowed the state to withdraw its rest and present more enhancement evidence after it had pointed out the flaw in the state's exhibits. In contrast here, the district court never acted impartially or advocated in the way that the court did in Gray. In fact, the district court here was not even provided with any enhancement evidence at the initial sentencing hearing. So it was impossible for the court to assess the evidence, determine it was insufficient, then advise the state of the nature of that insufficiency, then allow the state over the defendant's objection to offer more evidence to remedy that defect.
I'm kind of curious. I took a close look at the State v. Valdez case, and I'm curious, and I don't know that this helps Mr. Wiley, but I am curious that in that case, a DUI statute was involved. And specifically in the statute, it says that the court shall, as part of the judgment and conviction, make a finding on the record of the number of prior convictions. And in that case, that had not happened. But fortunately, I guess for the state in that case, the defendant had pled to the enhanced level of the charge. So I don't think there's a statutory provision in this case with regard to requiring a finding to be made in the judgment and conviction, because for sure, in the judgment in this case, the court only finds the defendant guilty based on the jury's verdict of third degree domestic assault. There's no reference to a prior conviction. Are you aware of any requirement that, like the DUI statute in Valdez, that in this case, it needed to be part of the judgment and conviction itself?
I don't know of any specific requirement of that, but just in reviewing the cases that deal with enhancement, it seems to me that in order to properly enhance to a second offense, really on any type of an offense, whether it's a DUI, I think Oseguera dealt with a DUI enhancement, Valdez dealt with a motor vehicle homicide. There have been other cases that have dealt with habitual criminal enhancement. So sort of regardless of what type of an offense, and actually even in an opinion that was released today, an unpublished opinion that dealt with enhancement of a theft offense. The evidence of enhancement.
I'm sorry, do you think that that would make a difference in this case if statutorily, like in the DUI statute, it specifically says that the court shall make a finding as part of the judgment and conviction? Not as part of an enhancement sentencing hearing, but as part of the judgment and conviction. If there was statutory language like that, as in the DUI statutes, could that be a problem here where no such finding was made part of the judgment of conviction?
I don't think that that changes the remedy, because in these prior cases, regardless of what the underlying offense was, the remedy is still the same, that if enhancement, if the evidence of enhancement is not sufficient, the case is remanded back for a new enhancement hearing. It's not remanded back on the lesser offense. I don't know that that changes the remedy, and I don't know of a specific provision that requires that for this type of offense in a domestic assault situation, but I don't believe it changes the ultimate result. Going back just quickly to Gray, the district court never acted the way that the court did in Gray, and in fact the court was never provided with any enhancement evidence at the initial hearing. It did not assess the evidence, did not determine it was insufficient. It did not then advise the state of the nature of that insufficiency, and then allow the state over the defendant's objection to offer more evidence to remedy that defect. None of that occurred in this case, and so Gray is factually distinguishable. And the state would also note that appellant never objected to the district court proceeding with an enhancement hearing. After the sentence was vacated, the defendant never objected. And so arguably, Wiley has not even preserved the claim. And at best, it would be reviewed under plain error. The other part of the analysis just simply refers to the prior holdings in Valdez and Oseguera, which have been enumerated, I think, at length in the state's brief. So unless there are specific questions, I would ask the court to affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right. Thank you very much, both of you. The matter is submitted.
Thank you.
I should say, I'm pretty sure we were out of time for rebuttal. Would that be right, Jody?
Yes, Judge Bishop.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I want to make sure Mr. Kosmic, I didn't want to short change you even 5 seconds. So, all right. Thank you both very much. The matter is submitted.
Thanks.